Number 7 A.
We come to the next subject, that of life, and we have here an epitome that says that the practice of animal magnetism has no place in divine being. Well, this is from the standpoint of life itself. It says now that animal magnetism is not a beingness, that it has not an isness, that therefore it has no place in divine being. Again, we can see how she does away with animal magnetism as nothingness from the point of view now of life, of the question of isness or existence. It is a very short statement that we have here. It's only a few paragraphs and summarizes, so to say, in a few paragraphs, the whole fifth main edition that she gave. Remember what that main edition was? It had to do with the dragon persecuting the woman. That was her guiding line for dealing with animal magnetism. It was a completely new approach compared with the preceding one. And here, that whole sense of persecution is really brought down to the point of ridicule, brought down to the point that we don't really have to care much about it, that it has no place in being. Let's see how she evolves that subject. First, from the point of view of mind, just one sentence. She says, in the reality, there is no mortal mind. And here she italicizes mortal, just to bring out, that's now my subject. It's not just mortal mind and human mind. It's now mortal. Is mind mortal or is mind immortal? Therefore, is there a mortal mentality that can transfer its own depravity to other mortals? And so she says, well, in reality, there is no mortal mind. So it is no more a question of mortal mind persecuting the divine mind or the idea. You see, she lifts it right up again to that altitude of truth and love where we see either something is or is not. Either truth is truth, then error is not. And so here she translates it to the subject of life and says there is no mortal mind. You know, I say that, and when I say it, somehow I have a feeling that you think, well, Max, get on with the job. Don't always repeat the same thing. We know now enough about mortal mind. But the fact is that when you are at home and sit back and contemplate being, and contemplate the model of being, which we will take next year, and contemplate what being is, it's a wonderful thing to say, all right, we have acknowledged to ourselves and admitted to ourselves that God is life. Okay, so life is the only thing that exists. A counterfeit doesn't exist. Therefore, mortal, which is the counterfeit of life, doesn't exist. Therefore, everything that is of the nature of mortality does not exist. Therefore, the counterfeit of mind does not exist. There is no mortal mind. Now think of it, how you practice from this standpoint, how you give a treatment from that standpoint. Usually one gave a treatment and said, well, this whole case is a case of mortal mind. Mortal mind is the cause of this situation. Mortal mind is the cause of all disease. Don't we learn that? You see, that's all right. But when you practice from the 6,000 and 7,000 year period, then you don't ask what is the cause of this disease. Well, it is mortal mind. There you look out from life of being and see being, life, is mind, therefore the only mind, therefore only mind, capitalized, exists. I don't have to deal with mortal mind. It doesn't exist. It's not there. That's why animal magnetism is nothing. Can you see that that one goes a step further? Then if you deal with it from the point of view of, say, of the 5,000-year period, there you say, yes, you have to reduce disease back to its cause, effect back to cause. But in the 6,000 and 7,000 year period, we don't do that anymore. We don't go out from a false phenomena and read from a false phenomena and go from a false phenomena, which is effect, back to its cause, also a false noumenon, and say it's mortal mind, and I have to deal with mortal mind. See, that's the 5,000 year period, you do that perhaps. But when you go out from the synonymous term, not from the phenomena, you go out from life, know that life is, then we can look from life at mind and say, therefore, mind is, therefore, mortal mind is not. And so we fill our thought with life as mind so much that nothing can enter it. So that not even the thought that we have to deal with mortal mind enters in. Doesn't come up again. That's what I want to show you. See, that actually this chapter here takes always that high standpoint of truth and love of those last two synonymous term, and is dealing with all the seven subjects from that high standpoint, and no more as she has been doing it through the evolution of the chapters. I feel very much, you know, that we are too much really influenced by what has been said and written before the final edition of Science and Health was written. If we read prose works, if we read all that, and we see there in miscellany, we see there in miscellaneous writings, all those old articles from the 1880s and 1890s, which she herself not even wanted to be in prose works, which she herself has outgrown afterwards, after it was written and printed, that she has outgrown it with the 6th and especially with the 7th edition, that we are in danger, that we take that which she has written in the 1880s and then the 1890s, that we take that as the final gospel, as the highest gospel. Whereas she says very clearly in the introduction to miscellaneous writing, I give this thing so that you can see how the thought has evolved. That's something else than to take it as gospel truth. And I feel very, very much that especially, as I have said, in this chapter, you encounter actually a presentation of animal magnetism which we do not encounter in the earlier writings of Mrs. Eddy. And that we have to see. We have to have the courage to see that. We have to have the courage to get away from that Sunday school belief that there was a holy woman that in 1866 just had a revelation, and that revelation just dropped down onto her, and that she was sitting down and taking a pencil and just writing down, and that was the final presentation. It wasn't. It wasn't at all. We'll see that tomorrow when we take the development of the idea of Christian Science since 1866. We see that very clearly, that we must see that Mrs. Eddy had an evolution in consciousness, and that evolution was not just an evolution from mind to spirit to soul to principle to life, truth and love. It was at the same time evolution from a consciousness that was only feeling something about mind, and then a higher consciousness, it was rising higher and higher with another form of consciousness, not just giving a new aspect of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Just like we have seen in the 1,000-year period, sorry that I go off a tangent, but sometimes it's necessary when it comes into one's mind. Just as we have seen with the 1,000-year period, first, for a long, long time, we presented the 1,000-year periods only from the point of view that each 1,000-year period brought in a new accent of a synonymous term, that the first thousand-year period had the accent on mind, the second on spirit, the third on soul, the fourth on principle, and on life and truth and love. So, and that was true. That's the Genesis order. But then suddenly we began to realize that there is another approach to it, namely that with the development from one synonymous term to the other, the frame of consciousness changed with which we are considering reality. That the frame of consciousness, the altitude of consciousness changed. And that is what we try to bring out with this booklet, the red booklet, The Spiritual Breakthrough Through the Next Millennium, which tries to show that with every thousand-year period, not only has the accent changed in the world order, but also that the frame of consciousness changed, that therefore reality was symbolized quite differently from thousand-year period to thousand-year period with a different frame of consciousness, with a different structure of consciousness. And that is more important than the ordered development through the seventh synonymous term, because one can see that we still today mostly were thinking in the 4,000-year period or even in the 3,000-year period, that we haven't got out really of the structure of consciousness of those early 1,000-year periods, that we have a lot of difficulty in getting out of the 3,000 of that family tribal belief where people are of interest, where a relationship of people to people are brought out and have to be set right, where, or that then they are still in the 4,000-year period, always thinking just along metaphysical ideas, exchanging things for ideas of soul, exchanging things for ideas, exchanging things for idea. There are thousand, million things, exchanging things for ideas. It's a burden. Until one can see that this is a very old structure of consciousness, a metaphysical structure of consciousness, and is not really up to date. So that we are aware that we really take today, where we are at the brink of the 6,000 to 7,000-year period, that we take at least the 6,000-year period structure of consciousness and work out from that structure of consciousness, then to the seventh. And here in that chapter on animal magnetism, I could see that in the clearest way in all the chapters when I compared them with the earlier chapters. So one could nearly say, I don't know if I will be very much criticized by saying that and attacked by that, but one could nearly say, forget what Mrs. Eddy has written on animal magnetism up to around about the middle of the 1890s. Because up to that point, she was in that mood of the first five development, which she afterwards overthrew herself. Not I am going to overthrow it. She herself overthrew the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth aspect or approach to animal magnetism. She herself overthrew it and said, now stop that whole thing about animal magnetism in the journal. There is another way of doing it. Fill your thought with truth and love. And if you fill your thought with truth and love, nothing can enter anymore. And animal magnetism just has not a single door through which it can enter. There is not a leak in that wall, in that panoply that you have put, that you have built around yourself with truth and love. Then you don't. Then you deal with animal magnets quite differently. Oh, could I put over something? So I guess after a year, I hear it from some places. Well, Max is against Mrs. Eddy, and Max says it. I speak from experience. All right. So let's go back to the text and see how life as mind is brought out. In reality, there is no mortal mind, and consequently no transference of mortal thought and willpower. Can you see? She does away with the whole thing that she has been writing in the first five editions. She said, there I have accepted that there is a mortal mind, that there is a mind, that there is a mind transference, that one mind transfers itself to the other mind, that the mind of the practitioner can be transferred to the mind of the patient. One didn't know quite how it was done, how that did, but it was practiced. And now she says, well, if there is no mortal mind, then also there is no mortal thought transference, and that therefore there is no power in it, there is no willpower. And so she does away with the power of mortal mind. So she goes right, can you see, she goes right one step further back in the development and says, I am not going to deal with mortal mind, I am going to deal with the fact that there is no mortal mind. Because mind is all. That was her great revelation, which she said, that revelation brought her finally to the point where she could see that mind is all, and mind is all in all, and that matter is nothing. That's her great cornerstone on which she built the whole system of science. Then we go further. We can get the tone, a little tone of spirit. Life and being are of God. So you had a very... This still belongs to the first, to mind. Now comes spirit. In Christian Science, man can do no harm, he can do no evil. You get the sense of spirit. That spirit, if life is spirit, then life can only bring forth something good, can only project out good. So science, but again, it's interesting. You see, she says here, she doesn't say man can do no harm. That she doesn't say. She says, in science, man can do no harm. In mentality, he can do harm. If he drops down to the level of thought transference, then he can do harm. Then he can influence people. Then he can hypnotize people. But in science, in Christian Science, he can't do that. So we always have to know, are we talking in science or are we talking in metaphysics? In metaphysics, he can do harm. A lot of harm. And all the occultism and all the witchcraft, black and white witchcraft, they all can show that they can do harm. For scientific thoughts, you see, not thoughts, scientific thoughts, thoughts of science that have their origin in science, are true thoughts, and they pass now suddenly from God to man. They are not passing from man to man. Up to this point, it was always... Animagnetism is the thought transference from where to where, from man to man. Now, suddenly she said, look here, if you go out from the synonymous term, then there is only one thought transference possible, namely from God to man, so that thoughts actually pass from God to man. Yeah. And that only does good, not harm. So you have the tone of spirit in it. Then she comes to the further subtone of soul, where she says, when Christian Science and animal magnetism are both comprehended, as they will be in no distant date, she hoped that both would be comprehended. Up to that point, only animal magnetism was so more or less comprehended, but not Christian Science, not the other way around. Because you remember how when dealing with animal magnetism, she's only lately in the sixth edition, she exchanged that occult science of mind to the science of mind, to Christian Science, and introduced for the first time the term Christian Science instead of the occult science of mind. So only when Christian Science also is understood, and not only animal magnetism, if both are comprehended, as they will be at no distant date, it will be seen why the author of this book has been so unjustly persecuted and belied by wolves in sheep's clothing. Can you hear the whole fifth main edition? Huh? was all about that persecution, the dragon persecuting the idea. And now she says, you will understand why that happened, why that was possible. You will only understand it when you go out from life itself. If you go out from animal magnetism or from the human mind, then you feel this shouldn't be so. From the human mind, it is unjust that the good suffers for the unjust, that the good should suffer. Why does the good man suffer? This is not just. This is not right. This is persecution. That is not right. All that goes on, and all it's humbug stuff that we could drop and get rid of. We really can put off a lot of burden when we go away from metaphysics and to science. Everything becomes light. My burden is light, Jesus said, because he was working in divine science. He was not working in metaphysics. So that will be seen, that when we comprehend, so that with soul, with spiritual understanding, we will see why that is possible. And now, in principle, she explains it. She explains it when she comes to the next paragraph. She says, Agassiz, the celebrated naturalist and author, nobody knows today anymore who Agassiz was. He was really quite an interesting naturalist. He was a Swiss-American and lived then at the end of his life in Boston. And what was interesting about him was really that he would see always something new through intuition, mostly in the dream. Mostly in the dream, he dreamt the solution. And he would get up and write it down or go down to his laboratory and try it out. Was a man that had a lot of intuitive sense and could see many things just by intuition or in the dream. Well, he said something which many others also say. One didn't have to go back to Agassiz. Namely, that every great scientific truth, therefore a new idea, goes through three stages. First, people say it conflicts with the Bible. First, they persecute it. They criticize it and says it goes against the old paradigm. Next, they say it has been discovered before. That's also true. And then finally, they had to admit, lastly, they say they have always believed in it. So this is the method shown here, why a pioneer is persecuted, because it is so that the new paradigm is not understood by the old paradigm. It has nothing to do with persecuting people. It is the old paradigm persecuting the new paradigm. It's the dragon persecuting the woman. Can you see, it's the same subject here in life as in the fifth main edition. And says, but then little by little, you know, they say, well, naturally it has, you are not the only one who said that. There are many, many other people who say the same thing. And there are many, many other people who have said that long before you said it. And then finally they said, actually, I always believed in it. Well, in my book I have given two other examples of that. And I think the nicest one is from Max Planck. You know Max Planck, the great physicist of this century. And he said, well, a new scientific truth goes through three stages. He said the first stage is actually that the opponents are not converted. They still oppose it. The second step is they die out. And the third step is that it is self-evident for the new generation. So that's a way to deal with it too, to see that an old generation dies out, and it's naturally nice to be of a new generation without dying as an old generation. So it's just a matter of being flexible in our mind, that we don't have to think first, we have to go into the happy hunting grounds before we see something new and see some new paradigm, but that we can do it right now if we have a sense of life as principle, of life, of the newness of life, of the ever-progressive sense of life where we are open to everything new, and when we don't shut ourselves up and in into an old dogma or concept, and that then something new can really take hold within us. A new science can really get hold in us. You see, this is so important for Christian scientists. I think Christian scientists are the worst kind of people in that regard. They are not willing to accept anything new. I have never seen in history, well, history is perhaps saying a bit a lot, but in general, that there is such a closed mind as the Christian scientists. They say, what my teacher said, that I believe, because it was my teacher. And that teacher can say anything. That doesn't matter. That's my teacher. But what another teacher says, no, no, no. If my teacher doesn't agree with it, no, no, no. If Boston doesn't support it, no, no, no. They are not asking, is it true? Is it the science? Is it the step forward? But they are absolutely closed in into that which they have been taught once. And that once was for all time. Very counterfeit of it. That's animal magnetism. So the whole Christian Science movement suffers under that kind of animal magnetism, that it is not open to the truth anymore. It's not open to the truth. They are only open to their teacher. They really put the teacher on a pedestal. Yeah. And very often you become a teacher because you have a good friend in Boston who pats you on the back. So, I should stop that kind of thing.